You're listening to the show. I'm Steve Goldstein.
And I'm Lauren Gilger. And Steve, it is the end of the year, and that means it's also the end of our year-long series with Phoenix New Times food critic Chris Malloy.
The final Sonoran Arcana.
Yes. So to cap it all off, Chris and I are bringing you a points of view roundtable discussion on the question he's been tackling in this column all year. What is Arizona food? Here is Malloy kind of laying it all out for us.
We are defining Arizona cuisine using the farmers, the chefs, basically everybody involved in the food system and all of the ingredients specific to place. And we're just trying to give this amorphous idea of Arizona cuisine a little bit more definition because there's a lot of different components to it.
Yeah, right, Lauren. And this year you've tasted some pretty arcane Arizona foods for this.
Most definitely. So I've tried cactus barrel jam, Arizona acorn miso, tepri beans, chiltepín peppers. I could go on.
Yes. All right. So who joined you for this finale roundtable?
Okay. So we brought in one of the leading chefs in this realm, Tamara Stanger. She's the executive chef and owner of Cotton and Copper in Tempe. And she's really using native, often foraged Arizona ingredients in her food to critical acclaim. And we also brought in Apache food activist Twyla Cassador. She teaches Apache people about the indigenous foods that she is rediscovering, the Apache food traditions on the cusp of being lost to time. She gathers this knowledge from elders, explores the Apache wildlands, and teaches a new generation of Apaches about their history and through it, their own self-worth. And Cassador kicks us off with this conversation this morning, and I asked her how those traditional Apache foodways got lost.
They were never lost. It was just something that was put aside because there was a time when colonization really came and impacted the way of life was when money came into place. If you weren't able to buy food, you were also considered poor. But also in the area that I reside in, there is Agent Orange that was sprayed throughout the lower regions of our community, which was a large farming community in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of areas that where you could forage that were sprayed, as well as cattle and the river and other areas of that community that really distant people from traditional farming, from foraging, from hunting.
Yeah. So this rediscovery that you've been doing of hundreds of indigenous ingredients that your people used to use all the time, when did that begin for you? And what was the sort of the personal journey that led you there?
That began for me 8 years ago. For myself, it was self-healing to begin with, reconnecting with my elders, reconnecting with the land, and mostly is with the healing process. And the more that I've learned about traditional food, the more open I was to understanding that this is a way of healing without using medication, without going into a clinical setting, going outdoors with the elders, foraging with them. But not only that, but the food also provided medicine for your body to help open up your mind, your spirit, your soul. So many things. It's not just food. I always say food is medicine for our people. And medicine in this modern world will say medicine heals you. Well, traditional medicine heals you also.
And Chris, I want to turn to you because you, when you profiled Twyla, went on a hunt with her, essentially.
Yeah.
Describe this for us, and what did you hunt for, first of all?
So we hunted for, am I saying this right, Glosho?
Yeah, Glosho.
So it's a wood rat. It's one of the species that's native to Arizona and that Apaches have been hunting for centuries and centuries. And so I went out on a late winter day. We went out into these prickly pear fields, and I watched Twyla and a few of her co-hunters. They had about 5-6-foot-long sticks, and they went into these prickly pear nests for the Glosho, and they kind of stabbed them with the sticks, and it's a traditional food boiled out in the wilderness and tastes kind of like, I would say, dark meat chicken, that turkey leg, yeah, with maybe a little bit of alligator or snake if you've had reptile. But it's good stuff. I mean, somebody listening to this might think that it's an exotic food, but like think about how industrial chickens are raised, you know, yeah, pumped full of chemicals and they never see the sun or feel the sun. Like, you know, this is an organic wood rat that's been eating all good stuff for its whole life and simply boiled out over the fire until the tail comes off. That's how you know it's done.
Yeah.
It's eaten out in nature. I mean, it doesn't get much more beautiful than that. And it was just an amazing day of food, an amazing day of Arizona food.
Twyla, can you list off some of the ingredients other than this particular rat, which we've heard about now, that you're also bringing back in and sharing with Apache people now?
We have agave, the sumac berries, we have the wild grapes, we have the wild raspberry, the wild strawberries, so many different greens, so many different nuts, so many different tubers, fungi, and they're just so many food.
All right, so I want to turn to Tamara here. So you're on the restaurant world side of this and sort of the urban side of this as well. When you were on the show for this series, you took us urban foraging in Papago Park. And you use these ingredients in your restaurant that you can literally find, like, outside of your house, in your backyard, or on the sidewalk or something like this. Why? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I've kind of always been involved in foraging, but I've met a lot of people in Arizona that have taught me foods here, and I first learned that there were so many edible things in the desert, it blew my mind. It just changed the way I looked at everything. So, I mean, I guarantee in any neighborhood you can find edible food, whether it's mesquite that we picked or different kinds of cactus. Somebody the other day messaged me, they're like, what kind of fruit is this? And they had a big, like, they had Ceres fruit. It was a Peruvian apple, which is basically the same thing as dragon fruit. People pay $5 a piece in a grocery store for. And he collected hundreds of them and shared them with everybody. It's like most people, they plant things in their yards. It's ornamental, and they don't realize that it's also food.
How do you incorporate it into the food that you cook, which is, you know, beautiful and on the, you know, the higher end of the spectrum in terms of culinary work?
Well, I'm lucky to have a menu that changes often, and I can do specials. So a lot of times when I forage, I don't get a large amount of stuff. I mean, a rule of foraging is to take a small amount and leave the rest. So I try to do small specials and just change that up. Working with the micro seasons, you can never predict when you're going to get a certain thing. Sometimes we get a lot of rain. Sometimes it's really dry.
Chris, can you sort of outline for us how Tamara and the work that she's doing in her restaurant sort of fits into the broader restaurant scene here in the Valley in terms of this is starting to spread a little bit. Like you're seeing this pop up here and there where chefs are using these kinds of native ingredients.
Yeah, so where Tamara fits in within Arizona cuisine is on the avant-garde. I mean, she's definitely pushing the boundaries, taking it to places we haven't really seen before, incorporating all kinds of techniques from all over the globe and using these different techniques and using the things that Tamara has learned over the years and aspects of her personality, creating these dishes that another chef probably couldn't really make. I mean, that's the beauty of some of the chefs on the fringe here. I think they're really like, they're taking these ingredients that have been around for millennia, and they're doing really thoughtful and incredibly innovative things with them. And it's not just innovation for the sake of doing something new. I think it works really, really well from a flavor perspective. And there is this strong element of connection to the land that you get when you eat this kind of food.
So that transitions well to Twyla and my next question for you, which is, so talking about these ingredients and the way that Chris does in terms of the connection that they can give people to the land, how does that play out in your work and in sort of your mission to teach Apache people about these ingredients?
Definitely reconnecting people to the land, but also to their inner self as being in Dea, being Apache. Learning about our origin stories, about the respect of food, land, water, and your inner self and self-being in this world.
How did it change your life?
For myself, I'm a former addict. I've been addicted to heroin, meth, cocaine, a lot of prescription drugs, attempted suicide several times in my life. I was a very dysfunctional child. I have great parents. They worked. They have babysitters, many different babysitters. One of them's boyfriend took me down to the river, State Tubayerakai. I went with him. I remember the smell of the willow. I remember the smell of the water. I remember the smell of dirt. And I never really understood why I was dysfunctional until I started soul searching and realized this is what really screwed up my life. And it took me 40 years of silence to finally break open and talk about it. And that was when I began foraging and harvesting, and it was part of healing. And I felt so much love out in the wilderness, in the mountains, with nature. And I took that form of healing into my way of working in the community of, like, if that worked for someone like me, imagine what I can do for other people. So taking other people out foraging, especially those that are facing a lot of social issues or a lot of things going on in a community, especially those of violent crime, was taking them out there foraging, reconnecting them to themselves and the land, and finding a way to heal without medication was number one. But also reconnecting them to who they are as Ndebele people. But just the fact that it's based on food and how healing food can be when you use it in the right element.
Chris, I want to transition to you and talk a little bit about what draws you to this in that way. Like why you find people like Twyla and are able to tell their stories and why you think those stories matter. Like this goes far beyond the sort of restaurant scene or the food scene in the Valley, right?
Yeah, I mean, to me, how food tastes is almost like the least interesting thing about it. I think food is kind of a window into deeper stories. I mean, when you think back to your food memories, your best food memories, whether it's with family or friends or significant others, yeah, taste plays into it, but it seems like such a minor thing. And yeah, we all want food that tastes good, but from a storytelling perspective, I think that when you're looking for those next level elements, that's what makes food really, really interesting. And when you're trying to define something like Arizona cuisine, where we have all these different amazing cultures, you have to look beyond how food tastes and look to elements like healing and indigenous foodways and agriculture and all of these various elements that we've covered directly or indirectly throughout this series.
Mm-hmm. So Tamara, as someone who loves the taste of it as well as the meaning behind it, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
This is your life, though. Like, you chose to dedicate yourself to the craft of cooking, right?
I did.
What is it about that draws you? And then how do you think that these kinds of ingredients, these stories, can change that food and make it mean something more?
Well, it comes down to a sense of place. People talk about local food, but it's deeper than that. It's not just eating food that's close to you. It's, like, really establishing who you are, what the culture is, and what it means to you. I learned this at a really young age. There was a woman, she was a mentor to me. She had a farm, but she took care of it herself. She grew wheat, she had fruit trees, she had cattle. And she taught me that you should eat the food where your feet are. You should put your feet into the dirt and eat the food that grows there. And it was just something that had always sat in my head, and I didn't understand why it was important till I got older. And I started getting out there into the desert, and I just started connecting with nature. And it's just, it's a feeling. I mean, I'm very inspired by the desert. And I also understand that my role as a chef is telling these stories to people. I am the connection between the farmer. I am the connection to this food. I'm the one telling customers when they come in why this is important, why they're eating these ingredients.
Okay, so then that brings us to our final question, which is back to the beginning, right? So, Chris, 12 months of this, 12 columns, some cover stories, et cetera. You've taken us foraging in the city. You've taken me out to Cave Creek to eat Arizona acorn miso. We've tasted wine. You know, we've talked to chefs. We've talked to farmers. Where do you think we are? Have you found an answer to that question when you're looking at that definition of Arizona food?
I think we found an answer, but it's an amorphous answer. It's so complex, and it's so old, but Arizona is a state that's barely more than 100 years old, and we have new immigrant communities establishing themselves all the time, and indigenous foodways which are resurging, and there's just so many moving parts, and I think to define Arizona cuisine, you have to try to at least consider them all, but you're never going to be able to give a straightforward answer, and that's why you write 12 columns about it and a few cover stories. But so where we are, I think we're at an interesting place. I think leading chefs like Tamara have really, at least in Metro Phoenix, kind of put some of these ingredients on people's minds. But at the same time, these Sonoran ingredients that I focus so much on are one important part of Arizona cuisine, but they're not the whole story.
What comes next? Like, where would you like to see this narrative go in 5 years, in a decade, and more?
I want people to get educated. Food has changed so much, and it's time to take a step back for nutritional reasons. Sustainability, that's a huge deal, too. Teaching people, I mean, you got to keep your natural resources safe. Those are disappearing. Like the groundwater, that's a huge discussion right now. That is disappearing. If we go back to different methods and historical ways of growing food that doesn't require a lot of water, we'll be okay, but it's educating people about that and changing diets and getting people to eat differently and see food differently.
Twyla?
In that same sense, it's just that it is deeper than food. It is looking at the environmental side of it, misuse of groundwater, contaminations of groundwater, and how it really does affect our foodways out in the desert. People out in the city do not see it, but I see it. I see the changes in the food pattern as they're growing and developing, and how some food will not come out because of climate change. So just educating people, educating community about the respect towards food to Mother Earth.
So if we're looking 10 years into the future, I think if we do have leaders like Twyla and Tamara educating people about these ingredients, they can be kind of intelligently worked into our Arizona foodways in a way that benefits the environment and our sustainable food culture. I think that from a food critic and restaurant perspective, these ingredients do also have the capacity to make our local food scene a lot more interesting and incorporate a lot of flavors connected to the land and to the people of the land that they just don't have in California or New York or Chicago. I mean, we have some fantastic ingredients native to the Sonoran, more than 250 by some accounts. I've heard as many as 1,000 or more. I think that, you know, not every chef's going to be working these kinds of ingredients into their food, but I think that those who do, you know, they're going to have something extra to offer, and it could make things really interesting, and I think it will make the food scene here a lot more appealing.
All right. That is Chris Malloy, the food critic for the Phoenix New Times, Tamara Stranger, executive chef and owner of Cotton and Copper in Tempe, and Twyla Cassador, Apache food activist. Thank you all for coming in.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thank you.